Six Music.
Discover more mixes from Six, from some of our favourite and most exciting artists on the BBC Sounds app.
BBC Radio.
BBC Radio 6
Music.
Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time with Danny Brown.
Hello, I'm Matt Everett, and you're listening to a brand new episode of The First Time here on BBC 6 Music and BBC Sounds. This is the show where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and take a look at the pivotal first musical moments who made them who they are today.
Remember when my first meal was school lunch? Now I spit a 16 straight with no punch. Remember all the dinner, all we ate was Captain Crunch. Now we blow big on our way to brunch. Went from good fella to commissary slips. Now I got back up, man, every time I slipped. Never ever quit, I just kept on pursuing. Teacher always asked me, what was I doing? Scribbled in my notebook and never did homework. Low attention span, guess these Adderall work. Rock Tommy Hill shirts, ones with the boat. Rock poor kicks way before we even. Used to have baby lungs choking when I. Nowadays makes a whole seven in a sitting. Remember back then, man, we thought we grown up. Rushing at a kid just to be grown up. Yeah.
In this, the final episode in this season of The First Time, we welcome to the show a Detroit-born rapper described as one of rap's most unique figures. His music-obsessed youth and dream of becoming a rapper resulted in him emerging in 2003 as part of the collective Reservoir Dogs. His career was interrupted by an 8-month jail sentence, which he finished in 2007. But upon his release, his focus on a music career intensified and brought him to the attention of Jay-Z's label, Rockefeller. Now, while that deal ultimately fell through, it drove him to create 4 volumes of his Detroit State of Mind mixtape series and his first solo independent album, The Hybrid, in 2010. That saw him utilise his trademark high-pitched vocals, finding his darkly funny style and an eclectic production approach that would see him scale the US charts and go on to release albums including the brilliant Atrocity Exhibition on Warp Records. In the wake of his new album, Quaranta, emerging late last year, I'm pleased to welcome to The First Time, Danny Brown.
Rushing at a kid just to be grown up. Yeah. Whoever thought I'd be the greatest growing up.
In this show, we cover Danny's youth, his earliest musical passions and first public performances, as well as the single-minded vision that's always driven him. We discuss the failed Rockefeller deal, but also how he's discovered his own unique style. Danny also talks about his long battle with substance abuse and how that nearly derailed his career, and also how his experimental sound has often put him at odds with a lot of the US hip-hop community. Not that he cares. But I still started by asking Danny, as I do with all my guests, when was he first aware of music?
I mean, the most that I remember, I was in kindergarten, and my babysitter at the time, he was my cousin, uncle. You know how that runs.
Everybody, Yeah. So everyone says it's uncle or auntie.
My cousin uncle, he was babysitting me, and he came and picked me up from kindergarten, and it was raining outside. I mean, it's kind of crazy that you can remember what happened in kindergarten, but it was the first time I really understood what music. He was just rushing me, and he was like, man, you got, because I always, you know, you're a kid, you always walk in, you be slow, and you know, I don't know, but he's like, I can't be playing with you today, man, we gotta hurry up and get home. And I was like, he's like, that new LL Cool J album just came out,
right?
So he had just got LL Cool J, and it was the vinyl, it was still in the plastic, and he rushed home. And so I'm nosy, I'm a kid, so I follow him into the basement, and he put on LL Cool J radio, and it was like everything. I was like, I'm gonna be a rapper that day.
Like that, yeah. Instantaneous.
That day, I was like, yeah, I want to do this.
My radio, believe me, I like it loud. I'm the man with the box that can rock the crowd. Walking down the street to the hardcore beat while my JVC vibrates the concrete. I'm sorry if you can't understand, but I need a radio inside my hand. Don't mean to offend other citizens, but I kick my fire way past 10. My neighborhood is tough, but I still sport gold and I'm out to crush. My name is Cool J, I devastate the show, but I couldn't survive without my radio. Tell a rock my name is with a heavy bass. I keep the suckers in fear by the look on my face. My radio's bad from the boulevard. I'm a hip-hop gangster and my name is Tar. Just stimulated by the beat, bust out the rhyme. Get fresh batteries if it won't rewind. Get to play every day, even on the subway. I would've got a summons, but
your dad was a was a DJ, wasn't he?
House DJ.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure like I heard house music around, but the first time I heard rap music.
Right.
Like, that was like, I mean, and I guess that's how crazy he was about it. Like he was just real, like, you know, because he was kind of like a cool, nice guy. And for him to be like, no, I can't be playing with you today. We got to come home. Like, you can't be playing. And he rushed me home. And first time I heard radio, just the first time I heard that 808, like, I just was sucked in ever since.
Yeah. So tell me a bit about the other music that was just kind of around in the house then. Is it kind of Roy Ayers, I think you mentioned, being something that was around?
Yeah, it was always different types of music, I would say, for the most part. My dad had a wide range of genres that he would listen to. It could be jazz, but it didn't really gravitate to me, I would say, until I heard rap. Because he even played like rap and stuff, but I don't know. It just was that, because, you know, like my dad, his favorite group was like Tribe. He would listen to Tribe all the time, taking me to school. And then it'd be like certain albums that, like, I remember the first time I saw the N.W.A. Straight Outta Compton in his car. It was the tape. And I was like, how come you don't ever listen? I want to hear this. He's like, no, we can't listen to that.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Straight Outta Compton is a crazy brother named Ice Cube. From the stupid dope gang with an attitude. When I'm caught off, I got a sawed off. Kick knowledge and bodies are hauled off. You too, boy, if you get with me. The police are going to have to come and get me off your back. That's how I'm going out. For the sucker duck brothers that's showing.
So he wouldn't play like certain stuff around me, you know? So I would have to hear that kind of stuff from my cousins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were they like?
My cousins?
Yeah.
I mean, they were just, you know, bad kids. You know, they used to steal tapes.
Right.
Yeah, that was back in those days. They would go like to the Sam Goody and stuff like that, and they would go in there and steal tapes. I mean, one of them went to jail for stealing tapes, and my grandma had to go get them out. But yeah, so he would always just steal tapes and have tapes around.
Okay, so say I come, like, you're like, I don't know, 12, 13, and it's your bedroom. If you got like a bunch of tapes and CDs, what would I find if you got like
12, 13, me?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, see, my dad, he was still, I mean, he was, you know, he would buy me music around that time.
Right.
So it'd be a lot of times, like me personally, I was listening to stuff like Spice One, like a lot of West Coast gangster rap stuff. Stuff I shouldn't have been listening to. Too Short, you know, Extra Sexual stuff. So he would always try to bring me albums that was more, you know, hip hop. That was more, try to get me away from that kind of stuff. So, like, he bought me Wu-Tang.
Right.
You know, and once I got Wu-Tang, that's when my whole world changed.
I grew up on the crime side, the New York Times side. Staying alive was no job at second hands. On old man, so then we moved to Shaolin Land. A young youth, you're rocking the gold tooth. Low goose, only way I begin to G York was drug loot. And let's start it like this, son. Rolling with this one and that one. Pulling out gats for fun. But it was just a dream for the team who was a fiend. Started smoking wools at 16. And running up in gates and doing hits by high stakes. Making my way on fire skates. No question I was. The combination made my eyes bleed. No question I would flow off and try to get the dough off. Sticking up white boys on board. My life got no better. Same damn low sweater. Times is rough and tough like leather. Figured out I went the wrong route. So I got with a sick ass click and went all out.
Cash moves everything around me. Green get the money. Dollar dollar bill, yo. Cash moves everything around me. Green get the money. Dollar dollar bill, yo.
Tell me about why Wu-Tang. Why did it hit you so hard then?
Now, I mean, I always thought to myself, like, you know, like I just thought Wu-Tang was so cool. But now that I realize, I was in the sixth grade then, and there was this girl that I really liked. But she was from Syracuse, New York.
Right.
And she used to always sing Method Man in class. And I was like, oh, I got Wu-Tang too. So I think I started listening to Wu-Tang more to try to impress her.
Sure. Yeah.
So it was a girl, like most of the stuff in my life.
Like most musicians, I think there's a certain amount of like, this is going to help me look good.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain amount
but
of that.
Yeah, but once I really started listening to it, like I was wearing like Dickies and flannels, trying to dress like a West Coast dude, like looking like Snoop Dogg, had like a big afro and stuff. Then once I started listening to Wu-Tang, it's like it changed overnight. I was wearing Timberlands and army fatigues. But I was just really trying to impress her, though.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Within that, me trying to impress her, I just started listening to more East Coast music. And I remember buying Nas the first time. Like, because I liked the Nas because I seen a video of him. And he said he had that line. He was like, wavy hair, chipped teeth. And I had messed up teeth. I had chipped teeth then. So I was like, oh, I like this guy, you know. So I bought Nas' album, and I was just blown away. That was like the first time I heard music where I felt like I can close my eyes and visualize where he was from. Okay. Like, I'd never been to New York before then, you know? And just hearing that album for the first time, like, I closed my eyes, and I was inside a Queensbridge project. Nothing was that detailed and visual to me. So I just fell in love with Nas after that. Then I was just all the way, I was just listening to everything. At that, I mean, well, all New York rap for the most part.
It's yours. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
It's yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine.
I sip the dumb peak, watching Gandhi till I'm charged and writing in my book of rhymes all the words past the margin. The whole of mic, I'm throbbing. Mechanical movement, understandable smooth ish that murderers move with. The thief's theme, the thief's play theme. Me at night, they won't act right. The fiend of hip hop has got me stuck like a crack pipe. The mind activation, react like I'm facing time like Pappy Mason. With pins, I'm embracing. Wipe the sweat off my dome, spit the phlegm on the streets. Suede Tim's on my feet, makes my cipher complete. Weather cruising in a six cab, a Montero Jeep, I can't call it. The beats make me falling asleep, I keep falling, but never falling 6 feet deep. I'm out for presidents to represent me.
Say what?
I'm out for presidents to represent me.
Say what?
I'm out for dead presidents to represent me.
Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world?
Did you kind of lose yourself in music then? Was it a place that you went to kind of, I don't know, find yourself when you listen to music?
I mean, that was like, I mean, it was my hobby. Like, right. I would get out of school. And it was, I mean, I played with like action figures till I was in high school. And I would like sit at the table with all of my action figures like Spider-Man and wrestling figures. And I would put on like albums and I would like make them perform shows for me. So I used to do weird stuff like that, you know?
That's nice. Yeah, that age when it seems so almost kind of magical, and there's that point you think, well, maybe I could do that. You stop playing, you start thinking, maybe there's a possibility,
yeah,
that could be me. When did that first happen to you?
I started rapping in kindergarten.
Yeah,
like,
really?
Yeah,
because right. That's like I've read that is like you were literally rhyming like when you could talk. Is that actually the case?
I mean, I would like my cousins and they always rapped and stuff, but you know, I would just rap and it was like, you know, because they were way older than me. But I remember one time I had rapped for them, and then they just gave me like a crazy look. That's not your rap. You didn't write that. And in my head, I was like, I was just freestyling. But I knew I had something then when they gave me this, just the way they reacted to that. So, and I kept doing it. So, but it always made me like the cool kid in school.
Right.
So that's what kind of inspired me more and more, because I wouldn't tell people that I know how to rap. And it would always be like one kid that rapped in school and he'll rap or something. Then I would rap. Then I would always, you know, that's how I always made a lot of my friends. Every time I was like the new kid in school or something, that's how I became cool, like all the time. So it was like, that was my thing, but I never really, I guess I was kind of shy in that sense, you know?
Yeah.
Or just like, you know, just didn't have that like self-esteem to be like putting myself out there like I can rap, you know? Because it would hurt my feelings if everybody was like, you whack. I would have been like, you know, so when I was here to like the supposed to be the rapper kid in school and they were always here, I'd be like, oh, I'm better than him. So we always had like battles on the playground and stuff like that.
Yeah. When did you first perform in front of a crowd?
Like a crowd? I mean, I was performing early as a kid. Like my mom, we used to have like family reunions and we always have like talent shows during the family reunion. So my mom used to always make me rap and like get up there and rap and stuff. So I remember like stuff like that, or like just even talent shows in school.
What were your party pieces? If it was a family thing, it'd be like, go on, go.
I remember the worst thing I did performing at one of my family reunion. I did Bell Bib DeVoe Do Me. That wasn't real, you know, that wasn't a good idea. All my grandmas was looking at me like, what is going on right now? But, you know.
Take a look at me. Tell me, do you like what you see? Do you think you can? Do you think you can do me?
It was even to the point, like, when I was, like, in high school, I would walk home from school and, like, you know, it was, like, a lot of drug dealers on every corner.
Mm-hmm.
And every corner, somebody would stop me and give me, like, $10, $20 to rap.
Really?
I would come home with, like, $50. like almost every. So it was like almost driving me to keep it going, you know?
Yeah.
They inspired, I mean, you know, just gave me that confidence that I can do it.
Because there's tracks on the new record that kind of name check artists from like way back when, like Sade.
Yeah.
I mean, to this day, she's still the coolest. Do you remember kind of hearing her? That kind of super soulful.
That
super
was like my lullabies.
Right.
You know, my mom would put that on. Like, you know, when it's time for us to go to bed and stuff, because it would be like a time, we'd go to bed, but we'd be able to watch TV.
Yeah.
And then it'd be a time, she'd be like, y'all got to go to school tomorrow, cause I got to cut the TV off. And she'd cut the TV off, but then she always put on music. So, and Sade was always like one of her go-tos. And that would put us to sleep. It would put us to sleep. So I just remember a lot of nights just being in my bedroom, just listening to it, you know?
That's a beautiful way to go to sleep.
Yeah, definitely. I watch the sun off the shore.
I got the phone call asking me to do the show.
Hugh Stevens.
I sat on the floor and cried like a baby. A very happy, emotional baby. And so to be part of the Six Music family on air with you, the listeners,
means the world.
It's about the whole culture, from the record shop to the gig venue, celebrating live music in all its forms. Talking to the legendary and emerging musicians. I play as many brilliant tunes as I possibly can, live and direct from my hometown of Cardiff. So finish the day and start your evening with me,
Hugh Stevens.
Tuesday to Friday afternoon from 4.
Six Music. Matt Everett's The First Time with Danny Brown.
Six Music. First time in a studio.
First time in a studio.
Yeah.
I would say a real official studio was when I was like 18.
Tell me about that.
My family got into like a real bad car accident around the time when I was in kindergarten. Like I think about it to this day. Like we definitely supposed to die. We got hit by like a semi garbage truck. Like I remember just waking up. I was laying on the ground. One of my teeth fell out my mouth, and the car was just like a balled up piece of garbage. So I don't know. We made it. So we got a lawsuit from the city. So when I turned 18, I got like $10,000.
Whoa.
So I was like, yeah, which I thought was like a lot of money at the time.
That's a dangerous thing to give any young person that much like, money.
I always brag about it in school. Like, oh, it ain't nothing. When I turn 18, I'm getting $10,000. I used to think it was a million the way I used to talk about it. But so when I got that money, that was the first thing I wanted to do was get into a studio.
Yeah.
So I found a studio that wasn't really too far from my house, but he never really recorded any rap music. He used to do like funk music or like, so he didn't know what it was doing. So I didn't even understand what it took. So I remember showing up to the studio and he was charging me like, I want to say like $100 an hour, something outrageous. Or now I look back like, he was definitely finessing me. So I show up to the studio and he like, yo, what you doing? I'm like, I ain't had no beats or nothing. So I got this old funk guy making these beats on his keyboard, recording me for $100 an hour. It was terrible songs, but it gave me a good learning experience to just understanding even how it worked.
Yeah. So when did it become like, okay, this is my vocation, this is my job now.
It's always been that for me, even when I was in school.
Yeah.
Like high school, I remember, because I wasn't doing too good in school. I would skip school a lot, getting bad grades. And I remember telling one of my guidance counselors, like, she was like, what you gonna do with your life? I'm like, I'm gonna be a rapper. What do you mean? Like, I don't need school. I'm gonna be a rapper. So I definitely bet it all on black. So yeah. I'm glad it eventually hit one day, you know?
It worked out all right, man.
Yeah, it took a while, but it did. Yeah, I never gave up on my dream, I would say that.
What's first release then?
My first release?
Yeah.
Like 2003, I was in a group called Reservoir Dogs. Mm-hmm. I know, real corny name. Nah, you know, but that was like, and I was working with this one producer. He had like a good studio at his house. So that's, I would say I got trained in the studio with him.
Okay, tell me about that. What things did you learn that have kind of stuck with you there?
I mean, he was one of those kind of guys that it was all about preparation. And I think that's what I learned the most with him. Because, you know, a lot of, like now, you know, we got studios in our home. You can just record whenever you want, just punch yourself in. But, you know, he wasn't the type of, because that was his, he made a living doing that. Like, he sold people studio time. So he didn't want you coming into the studio and messing around and don't know what you got going on. So, you know, he would make the beat and then he'd tell us, like, the song concept that we want. And then he'd be like, you got to come up with the hook first. And if the hook ain't dope, then we ain't doing the song, you know? So when we'll come up with the hook, and then he'll tell us to go home that night and write the song and make sure you have your verse perfected before you even come to the studio.
Right, right.
So just that preparation so we wouldn't be wasting time. Because, you know, he was recording us for free as a, like a passion project. And everybody else, that's how he paid his bills. So we couldn't cut into anybody else's studio time. We can come in and get maybe an hour a day. So we had to be on point. So I think that definitely helped me a lot. Now, because I'm still the same way with the way I make music. So, because I don't really like sitting around studios for long periods of time, because it's like a workplace.
Yeah.
You know, no one wants to be at their job overtime, you know? So I want to be able to get in and get out. So I think just the art of preparation.
Do Renaissance run this?
Yes.
Reservoir Dog FBC.
Yes.
Wrist so blue, it'll make you seasick.
Yes.
Danny Brown in your town, like,
yes.
That's that clown on the ground, man. Smoke fat cigars like it's a boy, yeah. We only destroy when our hands all on you like a Ouija board. Danny Brown ain't nothing y'all seen before.
It's like looking at my kicks, huh?
Yes.
You like how the sun hit my wrist, huh?
Yes.
You wanna come kick it with the click, huh?
Yes.
If you jump, I'ma flinch in this place, huh?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
What about that moment, like, because that's, at that point, people start paying attention, you know? People, like it starts, word starts to spread.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that, because that's that moment where you're like, oh, this is, maybe something is happening, maybe something.
Oh, yeah, because as I made that project, the guy we was working with, he took it out to New York.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we met at this A&R at Rockefeller. And then, but that was around the time when Rockefeller was folding, everybody was getting fired and stuff. So when he stopped doing that, he would just take me around the studios, or even just like a situation like when he was at Rockefeller, it could be like Cam'ron got studio time, but he ain't showed up yet. He late. So he'd be like, Danny, go in the booth real quick and knock out a song. And I go in there and knock out a song in 30 minutes because I'm prepared to do it.
Yeah,
I got it already memorized. So just even for me learning at that first studio, for me having situations like that, I was able to work.
Yeah.
And I end up getting to like a lot of music. A lot of music is out now. Like, a lot of people hear it. They don't even realize that was like, you know, recorded on somebody else's budget. Would you let me learn that you got to be on point when it comes to this record label stuff, you know, because you never know where your money's going.
Could you feel you were doing something different? Could you tell?
At that time, I wasn't. At that time in my life, that's probably why that didn't work out,
right.
You know, because I was just so caught up. I mean, I wouldn't say caught up, but, you know, no one knew what I was. And I was, at that time, I was listening to different music than what they were listening to.
Like
Dizzy Rascal. Stuff like that, you know, so, and they couldn't understand that, so they were just they just figured I'm Danny from the Midwest, and, you know, Nelly was popping at the time, so it was like, you know, just trying to put me over beats like that, and you know, I was trying to get a record deal, so I was down to do whatever,
yeah.
You know, so it took till I went to jail for like a year, and just being in jail, and once I got out of jail, it was like, I knew, because before I went to jail, I got really into like Jay Dilla.
Let's go.
Sound and substance of the world's hottest
And just that whole sound of Detroit, because I didn't really know any of that. I mean, I knew who J Dilla was because I, you know, listened to Tribe and stuff like that. But a lot of that stuff I thought was like New York music. I didn't know that was made back home. But, you know, I learned about all that and just got into that scene. And it was like, they were always like called back home and no one would ever heard of me, you know? So I was like, I got to make a name for myself back home.
Right.
Before I can make a name for myself anywhere else, right. You know? So, and then it's just like being influenced from different styles. Like I say, like the UK grime stuff and all that. So it was like me just putting all these influences that I've grown up with and just started to put them in a blender and start to create my own style, you know?
And you got the hybrid?
Yeah, then I did the hybrid.
What do you remember from kind of doing that? Because there's always that thing, it's like, you're aware when you're doing something good. You're aware when, like, things start to fall into place. And it's like, yeah, this is different.
I mean, the hybrid, that was like, that's when I just started feeling like I need to talk about something with my music. You know? Like, I had a lot of, like, topic-based songs on there instead of me just going and rapping and stuff like that. So I think at that time in my life, I pretty much was clear-headed. I wasn't really into drugs and stuff like that back then. It was just, I can make any type of, like, music trying to be cool or make a club hit or a girl song, you know? And I just like, man, I want people to understand where I come from kind of thing. And at the same time, showcase my skill.
Yeah.
So I felt like, you know, because I was getting, I wouldn't say bored with rap, but once you do the same thing for so long, you starting to want to try to spice it up a bit to try to make it entertaining for yourself. So I was just trying to take on challenges with that album. You know, try to talk about things that was going on around me.
My homie, the magician with the tech, make the chain disappear and reappear on his neck. I ain't tricking with you, no. But don't ask him. Only thing I give a so my throw you in the river. Hands tied tight. Watch him feel it in the air tonight. I'm spitting that dope. Smoking on regulars, ringing 16s like internet child predators. Rocking at 10 deep, but I stay dolo. You wearing polo? Who are you, Young Dro? I ain't fifth floor at the Bellagio. Vegas, that's resembling Rosario. Dawson, awesome, hit the head Mario. Sorry, yo, my tongue long, she squirted up the sheets. She gave me that Becky, I gave her that Yoshi. The only time you keys is motif, yeah. Go and sell a beat. You never sold a rock, still be sitting on the couch. If I was signed to contract, I signed to the rock. Now I'm signed to the streets. The D, the only thing that's provident for me. Fell out like big meat. When we about to cook up, but not the one from BMF, though the one from Linwood. It ain't a you see in brown, no, never. About to live the title of the greatest rapper ever. It don't get no better. It don't get no better.
And the reaction to it was so positive.
Yeah. I mean, that was like when the blogs first really started popping up and stuff like that. So, yeah, they was just posting me like, and then that was like the start of social media in some sense, too. Mm. So it was a lot of people posting that around. So, yeah.
Yeah. How do you think you handled the attention? Because it's...
I didn't handle it, to be honest, because before then, no one knew how I looked, you know? So that was like the first time I shot a video and people was able to see how I looked.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh man, his teeth is meshed up, man. He looks jacked up. So I didn't know how to handle that. Everybody was just talking about how ugly I was, man. So it made me develop low self-esteem in that sense where I didn't want to be like all on the camera and stuff. So yeah, it did affect me a little bit. But that album is what came across Tony Yayo. That's how he met me. He heard that album.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah, because like I said, when I was in New York, recording all the time. I used to record in a studio in Queens. And once that studio had went under, the engineer from there started working with Yayo. And Yayo had came to Detroit to shoot a movie. And he was with him. And then they, you know, you come to a city, you got to get some things and this and that. So they hit me up. And I had my music with me. So I was like, play this, you know. Let me play you some stuff. And he heard it and he was just hooked. He's like, yo, you coming with me right now. You going to New York with me now. And he literally took me to New York with him. I was with him for like a good 6 months or something.
Yeah.
That was like the first time I ever been on tours or anything.
Yeah, okay. So right, this is another first tour. Mm-hmm. Tell me about like when you get on that treadmill.
Yeah, it was the G-Unit. Thing.
I need y'all to start my wrist stay rocked till my TVs pop up in a Maybach Benz. I need y'all to start. Can't see me, my Bentley GT got smoke gray teeth. I need y'all to stunt. My neck stay blingin', my rims they gleamin'. I'm shining, man. I need y'all to stunt. I see you scheming, looking deep on dreaming. I heard you, man. I need y'all to stunt.
I mean, I was glad to do it because it showed me what it took to be able to do it, you know, because I didn't even understand. But just even just having that, you know, because you think touring is just a party nonstop. And I was like, no, this is work. It's kind of boring and lonely, to be honest. So I knew what to expect once it was able to get my stuff going.
Did you find, I mean, you know, XXX, big release, and everyone starts to lose their minds about it. Did you find yourself assuming a character? Like, because you said you thought, you know, necessarily, not necessarily a big in-your-face kind of guy, really. Mm-hmm. And there's that assuming a personality to deal with success, deal with attention.
Yeah, I would say so, in some sense. Because, you know, it's being a rapper is almost like being a superhero or like, you know, you just want to over-glorify your personality in some sense. But that was around the time where I was starting to get into drugs and stuff. And I guess that would heighten your ego in some sense. So, yeah, then around that time, I just felt like I was untouchable. Like, I felt like I was just like a bad, like, can't nobody rap with me, you know? So it was just that. I had the confidence then,
yeah.
I would say, when I recorded that album. That was just like, I knew what was up, you know? Because, you know, you make music and you want your friends to like it. You know, mm-hmm. So you make stuff that's surrounded by your environment and stuff. No one, you know, but that was the first album that I was like, I don't care what nobody think. This is for me, you know.
But that's it. Like, you, that confidence is a dangerous thing because it frees you. You're like, mm-hmm. I don't care anymore what anyone else is thinking. But also that confidence can be like unchecked.
Yeah.
That's when the wheels can fall off a bit.
But yeah, that was the first. And then, like, you know, people liked that album. So mm-hmm. It gave me the more confidence to start to experience more and being able to put myself out there.
Did you get a big first royalty check?
No. Oh. It came out for free, and then it did so good, they eventually started selling it. But nah.
I always like that idea of like the first big check, it, or it just lands in the account, you're like, right.
Mm-mm.
That's never happened.
Never happened. I'm still waiting on the first big check. Because I'm my biggest fan. First, so I don't even care what any outside source think in that sense, but this is the music business, so you know you got to be able to take constructive criticism and all that. But no, I didn't ever really. I mean, more of the pressure for me was like I would say I would have that confidence making it, but then when it's about to come out, then you just get that anxiety of like So if anything, I was just scared that, you know, people would think I was whack and then my career would be over. So I would have that, you know. But for the most part, I always trusted my gut, I think. You know, I never make music with my brain, which I probably need to start doing. I just always make music with my heart. And I'd be like, man, as long as I'm being pure and I'm being honest with it and I feel like I'm doing something, you know, that's real for me, then it's just going to translate.
The hybrid selling you, try again, sleep with the beast. Daniel in the lion's den, still drop dirty. After popping Eisen, it's our damn day, just to get violated. Ever seen that road whip? Babies have babies in a hood like whatever. We gained this together. Once got a whop and had money for the room. So we did the Humpty Hump in a Burger King bathroom. Low-key kept it undercover. The way she smells her, she's the quicker picker upper. No job. Dropped out in a felon. On the neck met a fat wife. His name had like 300 pounds. Maybe more like 280. Had a couple babies, 270, give or take it. Called that secure in the bag, had to fight the baby dad. Tried to stop how I eat, so I got up on the surf.
Tell me about meeting Q-Tip for the first time.
It was dope, man. Like, just being able to work with him, because like I said, my dad was a huge Tribe fan, you know, so he didn't even believe me when I told him I was going to work with him.
Yeah, tell me about that conversation.
Yeah, he just was like, you lying. Like, you know, he just didn't believe me. But no, I learned a lot from working with Q-Tip. Like, you know, one thing about me is just like being with people that's been doing this way longer as just like a sponge in that sense. Even when they don't think I'm learning, I'm learning from them. But yeah, because with me before I used to record music, it was almost like I say, I learned the art of preparation. So I used to want to be able to come in there and try to knock it out as quick as I can, like catching lightning in a bottle kind of thing, you know? Like, I would keep words wrong in it, you know, long as I got that emotion in the verse, you know? I would go for the feeling more so than I go with. But when I started working with Q-Tip, he'll make you do one verse like 3,000 times. Like,
oh, he's one of those, like,
yeah, perfect. Like, he got to have it perfect, you know? So, but then I learned a lot with that, because what he taught me was that you got so much time in the world to make it, but once you put it out, you can't take it back. So you might as well put all the love you possibly can into the music, you know? So I learned that from him. And just the art of post. Like I say, I would record something and that would be it. But he'll go back over and go back over it. And just so the art of just post. So now I definitely implemented that into the way I make music now.
Yeah.
But like, it could be a thing of overthinking sometime too. And that's like, just like you were saying, sometimes, you know. But we all get demo-itis.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I call it. You make a demo and you love the demo better than any other tape that's after that. But the thing is that I realize is that that's only me. That's not the actual listener. They don't know what the demo sounds like. They never heard that. So the best thing to do is just get a perfect tape, man. Go over it. You know, when you learn it from the demo. Listen to the demo so much that the rhyme is just in you. So I get to the point where I want to be able to say the rhyme without even having to read it.
So you're not even thinking about
it. Yeah, then you just put your feeling into it.
Came from the store where hot dogs got pulled right up in the same pot. Uncooked though, I went front, flipping on mats to flipping them sacks, hide seeks and spots to out and we sell every facts. War on drugs was a chess game, was a bomb, guns drawn on my front lawn. Just a young staring down the corner, checking out the hustlers with the latest kicks on them. Know what they want, mama ain't got it. Been up in school blind, but she know about it. I was just a young, know what I was at it for. Jumped off the porch, but really I wasn't ready for it. Get up off the hood, find a way out. Rap I'm on, either death or jailhouse. Wanna get away from all this stress. But me, mama just wanted the best. 'Cause ain't no next life, so now I'm trying to live my best life. Living my best life. 'Cause ain't no next life, so now I'm trying to live my best life. I'm living my best life.
Let the past be the past, like a sweat. Left you for a with cash. Came back better, looking better than ever. Talking about getting back together. I'm about to smash, I'm a bad whatchamacallit. Used to blow out the toilet after lockdown in the county. Smoke roaches in my bunk. You the type to cry and yell out turn. Not supposed to be here dead like Weekend at Burn. Used to bag up the weed and live off of the coke. By myself in the spot and I never got long. You can ask all of my home. Caught the bus with some stacks and I kept the heat around. Ain't no next life, so I'm living my best life. I'm living my best life.
The Six Music Festival
2024.
The Six Music Festival returns to its home in Greater Manchester.
Thursday the 7th to Sunday the 10th of March.
Bringing you the artists like you've never seen them before. With an incredible lineup featuring
Young Fathers, Gossip, The Smile, and loads more.
Expect worldwide premieres of brand new music.
Check out the full lineup and grab your tickets now
at bbc.co.uk/Six Music Festival.
The Six Music Festival
2024.
Six Music.
Matt Everett's The First Time with Danny Brown.
Six Music.
If I knew you, I would send you to the store. Pulled up in the Porsche, playing Kenny Lattimore. It's the matador, a metaphor, you're wrong like the letter four. For trying to sell that stepped on Macklemore. Jesus Shuttlesworth with Butterworth. Used to call me Mr. Gip, what's your money worth? She suck it in like pot belly. Ain't really got an ass, but she top heavy. In a Chevy looking like somebody told me something. Talking to your big homies like they owe me something. I ain't got time, bitch, I'm roly hunting. Had the big head, spinning small phase hundreds. Treat me like wormholes, mouth like I pre-ordered it, I download. Clown knows that brown knows, if you ain't getting money, what the f*** is you around for? I used to celibate, but I don't f*** around no more, I'm celibate. Had me trapped in that celibate. Locked up with some pimps, told me celibate.
We talked about this before, some of the names that have been referenced on the new record, and Mary J. Blige.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those. Tell me about first experiencing.
I wouldn't say it's first, maybe, because I think I heard, you know, Mary J. Blige was just like all over like the video channels and stuff like that. But I remember my mom and dad split up, and my mom, so it's kind of like a sad thing for me to hear Mary J. Blige, but my mom was really going through it, and she would just play that My Life album.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, all day, which that's what that song was kind of talking about too. How you can be going through something and music is the only thing that can make you feel better. It's kind of like, you know. So yeah, she would play that album all day, every day. And it took me to get older and hearing that album and to realize what was, you know, what she was using it to cope, you know.
Yeah. First album on Warp was Atrocity Exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a dense piece of work. Why did you go with them? I mean, obviously, I mean, they're an amazing label, but like, what was it about that relationship?
I mean, one thing, you want to be with a label that understands you and believe in you.
Mm.
And just with their track record of them dealing with, say, alternative rappers or music in general, you know? So I felt like they would understand what I was doing the most.
I was listening to it earlier. There's a lot of information on that record.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot happening on that record. What do you remember about getting it out of your head and onto the tape? Because just because you make a record and you want to make a record doesn't mean it's easy or an enjoyable process.
I mean, that was the first time I had a home studio.
Right, okay.
I had a studio in my basement and I would just work on it every day. But the first thing I did was, because I would usually, like when I make an album, I would just get beats and you rap to them and you're like, I like this beat, I like that beat. But with that album, I just took every beat that I wanted to capture with that concept. So it might have been a beat that I really didn't like that, but I feel like it fit the concept.
Yeah, yeah.
So I rapped over everything, I would say that, with that one. Usually I just try to pick beats that I think are the dopest. With that album, I rapped over everything and then just figured out what worked.
Yeah.
Which now I do now too, to be honest. Like, because sometimes, man, you get a dope beat, man, and it just whoop you. You're like, man, I ain't doing nothing with this, man. I'm trying my hardest, man, but this beat is kicking my, man. So with Atrocity Exhibition, I just rapped to everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was just throwing paint to the wall and see what stick, you know?
8 balls with a safety pin. I deserve the finer things. Told myself back then when I used to ride a Schwinn. Now I'm on a tour bus going places I ain't never been. Wrote my rhymes down on a paper bag. That was way back. Having dreams of a Cadillac. Dog, I had to bounce back. Locked it up. Why they do me like that? Now I'm on a jack and a county asking mommy for some money. Swear to God, she'd do anything for me. Now we out the hood in the nightmares. Us going back, so I won't go to sleep till I finish that. Cousin, if that fainted way, now I see better day. Miss a minute, second hour. Living on borrowed time, can't think about tomorrow. Cause it's about today, and a million wanna take my place. Let's get. Sacrifice your dreams, what it takes if you want anything. Got me missing sleep, cause my mind on the beat. So while I'm counting bars, y'all be count sheet. No cheat sheet, get it out the mirror. Get it how you live while I'm out here in the floor. When you wake up, wipe the cold out your eyes. It's a cold, cold world, but even hotter when you die. So no tribe to do. What about you? Work hard for where I'm at, do the same thing too. A lot locked up, wishing so it's like you. Got a letter from my saying he be out in June. Been down for a minute, and every single sentence thing ain't been the same, so I'm missing my staring at the ceiling, thinking how far I came. Was trapped in a storm, but I made it out the rain.
Was there a point when you first thought, like, in terms of your lifestyle, if you keep heading in this direction, maybe things will not end up where we need them to.
Yeah, but I was still having fun. Yeah, but I was kind of lonely. I had a girlfriend at the time, but I was pretty lonely when I recorded that album, just by myself all the time. It was like I wasn't around a lot of people at that time. It was just me, because I had a home studio for the first time.
Right.
I think that's what it was. So I never wanted to leave the house. I just wanted to just stay in my basement and just make music or do something that was constructive to the music. If I was studying other music, reading books, you know, I don't know, it's like a training camp or something like that. It was like I was putting myself through the fire with it, you know? That's why the album's so good, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because it ruined my life. I had nothing. Like I said, I didn't have time for no friends or just playing around. I was just literally in my studio every day, just recording stuff.
It's the only thing you had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was really worried with that album, too. That was one of those things where I was like, oh, man, people going to say this sucks. So I was just like, so it was like a world lifted off my shoulder when it came out and everybody was just giving me props for it. I was like, man, it worked.
Go dangerous, on that cat. Go tracks, man, hit it from the back. DJ Sop, bite me back. Bruce every day, we run that train. Put that thing in her caboose. Only way you hang is where I knows. Beware, I say, ain't no tropes. Y'all claim, y'all ain't like us. Hang up with a double up, ain't your dust. For that money, ain't that we trust. All for people, for greed and lust. When you put the trust, when guns gon' bust. Living every day like it's the end. Just waking up, feeling like a sin. Gotta keep an eye on all your friends. Cause everybody hungry and no streets. Grab your grandma for something to eat. No, it's tough, that's how I be. Growing up, living every day in a day. And it don't seem like don't change. No time to in the city of boom. Don't for the time, we emerge from the room. So that coach, I tweak our sound. Here we go, now here we go. Ain't no water, high flow, we gon' grow. Ain't no change, then how we gon' change? No umbrella, we stuck in the rain. Dark clouds hanging all over our head. No shine, shine, and no shine be lit. Light no squares, and no dots be red. Make your best friend that shot in the head. Drink, drink, oh, you ain't know that. When it rain, when it pour, get your on the floor now. Oh, you ain't know that. Better talk when you hear them gunshots go off. Pop off when those shots go off. Knock off, you tryna play me soft. Glock side on your face, dog. No baseball, better run home. Hit the line, blood on your tongue. Exorcist, show a head, get spot. Exodus, I might forget.
It's not healthy for someone to be that isolated.
I know, that's what would make me fall into my addictions and stuff like that, to be able to cope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like real not sleeping. I really had a problem with not sleeping at that time. Like I would probably sleep 4 hours a night maybe. So I was like on zombie mode all the time, just doing stuff just to stay up, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when was the point that you were like, okay, I've got to change this up. This isn't going to end well.
Hmm. I mean, working with Q-Tip.
Right.
Because I would be around him and I'd be getting blasted drunk. And he'd be like, man, you got to stop, man. You can't be coming to the studio all messed up. But around that time, I knew I wanted to change. I just didn't know how.
What'd you mean?
I mean, because I guess as men sometimes, you're just scared to ask for help. Feel like you're weak or something like that. So I didn't even know how to go about it. So it just sucked myself into a deeper hole, you know, as time progressed.
You said like around sort of 2020, you were suicidal. You did feel like...
Mm-hmm. I just felt like I was a burden. I was causing more damage than I was helping, you know?
But then what changed?
Especially going through like the pandemic and stuff.
Okay.
That's when it really got deep, really dark for me. But I think what changed for me is just moving from Detroit, you know, your surroundings is everything. Moving to Texas was me trying to escape it.
Right.
But it's going to follow you if you're not ready to give it all up, you know? So it followed me. And, you know, just being out there, man, and just was tired of it, man. Tired of embarrassing myself. Tired of hurting the people that love me, you know?
Why Texas?
I had a girl out there.
Right.
So I was going out there all the time seeing her, and we were getting serious. And then with the podcast that I do, talk to Tom all the time, and he always wanted me to do a podcast. But they were in L.A. at the time. He told me, like, oh, we moving everything to Austin. It was like a light bulb went off in my head. Like, I'm moving to Austin too then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that marked a change in mindset.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going out there to work. I'm going out there to be with this girl. And I'm going to get myself clean, you know. But it didn't work out that way the first year.
Reach swine. Can't show you to the water how you eat, son. We docking in that low tide. So strap up, man. It's time to ride. Go away, like go Tim. This above the rim when birdie with the. Time to fade out. This that lay round. Get down to lay down. Better stay down. Greyhound my playground. Got a Mexican homie named Chinese Mike. And the all black cutie, and he got that white. If you ain't got that green, then he might see red. Put a knot on your head, and we might see dread. Straight hair white with them pinky toes. Eating no noodles like Piscopo. You ain't talk to my lawyer, then I don't know. If you ain't watering the season, how we grow.
So this new record, this is like, what, 2.5, 3 years?
Yeah, I recorded it during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time to make a record.
Yeah, but like Q-Tip taught me, the art of post. I had a sculpture, you know, and we just kept chiseling until it got perfect.
Because it is, I mean, it's got life in it, this record. Mm-hmm. It feels full of life, you know. It's the first record to be released after you turn 40.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I believe you talked about birthdays, it's not a thing for you.
No. I don't celebrate my birthdays. I don't even do that.
Why not?
It keeps me young. I don't do that.
So the first time you got the record was done. It was sequenced, it's mastered, you put it on the big speakers, on the big Gen X or whatever it's going to be, and you listen to the whole thing for the first time, this new album. How did that make you feel?
No, I don't listen to it, to be honest.
No.
I remember where I was at. You know, I remember my mind state when I was recording it, and then I don't want to revisit those places.
Really?
But, you know, albums to me are like my kids. Once they out, they 18. You got to get out of my house. You know what I'm saying? I ain't taking care of you no more. You got to go out there and live, so... He out my house, man. He grown.
It's a funny thing. It's like,
I still love him. He my kid.
But I don't want you around.
But I don't want to be around him, man. He got to go out there and get a job. He got to go make some money, man.
I never quite know. There's no such thing as right. But like, on the one hand, you make the music you want to hear. That's why you make it, because you want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's not like, I'm going to go back and listen to myself.
No, I don't
tonight.
Listen to my music. I mean, I listen to it when I got to learn it for a show.
Yeah.
You know, but for the most part, no, because I'm always on to the next.
Yeah.
So now I'm already thinking about what I want to do with the next album. So I'm already trying to have another baby. You know what I'm saying?
Like a moth in a flame, when you burn, you learn. Rush to mistakes, but just wait your turn. Get what you need, what you want, you earn. When it's time, then it's time, but that ain't my concern. Like a moth in a flame, when you burn, you learn. Rush to mistakes just to wait your turn. Get what you need, what you want, you earn. When it's time, then it's time, but that ain't my concern.
What was your first sober show like? Because this is, I've had this conversation with a few musicians, because obviously performing after a few drinks is not an uncommon thing in music, but it changes everything.
I actually played a show the first day out of rehab.
Wow. That's
at Arizona State, which is like a known party school.
Why do that?
I mean, I needed the money. So, but it was, I mean, to be honest, you know, after being away, you know, like in rehab, music wasn't a part of my life. That was like, it was gone. I wasn't thinking about it. I was, you know, working on myself.
Right,
I was Daniel. I wasn't Danny Brown. Wasn't a thing.
Mm.
So I think playing that first show, like probably, you know, God do everything for a reason. So I think that just made me realize how blessed I am and what I love to do, you know. So it gave me that fire back again. Like, oh, man, people really love me, man. Like, you know, so it made me feel good, to be honest, because it made me like realize my worth. Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is my life right here. This is everything for me.
Yeah.
So I would feel good to be on stage and seeing people having a good time in the crowd, smiling at me. I would get that energy, man, and it would make me feel good about myself, man.
This rap done saved my life. Did up at the same time. That pain in my heart, I can't hide. A lot of trauma inside. You can see it in my eyes. Could have ended in seconds. This time on my side, show must go on, buy the ticket, take the ride. Songs of life with a dead dream, think he made it, everything ain't what it seems.
So this record, I mean, I'm sure it's been mentioned a lot. Literally the first line of the record is like, rap saved your life, but kind of messed up your life as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that?
At that time, nah, I don't. I'm at the point in my life now where I'm not focused on the negative no more.
Yeah.
And this is all about the positive. And at the end of the day, it has provided a great life for me. I'm able to do a job that I love. That's the dream. To be able to take care of yourself of something that you love to do. It's a lot of people working jobs and they don't want to be there. You know, but like when you're dealing with addictions and stuff like that, man, you make stuff worse than what it is. And you don't realize what's the actual problem. And the problem is your addiction. It's not the music. I realize I have the greatest job in the world. You know? So I'm really blessed with that. And I'm just don't want to mess it up. You know, I wouldn't do this forever. Because at the end of the day, I always feel like it comes from a higher power. Like, because I'm just some silly, goofy kid from Detroit, man. I don't know how I come up with them raps. They pop in my head from somebody. So God is my ghostwriter. But until you stop giving me bars, I'm rapping.
What's the next ambition then? If you're thinking about the next thing, what's in the distance that you want to head towards?
I feel like a lot of my music I was just making, you know, like you say, you're a rapper. You just want to be cool or just say something dope. And now to my point, I realized that this will live longer than I will. And it's a lot of albums that I pick up that are 50 years old, still amazing music. I just want to make something that's going to stand the test of time that 50 years later, somebody will pick up and get inspired by. But me, I'm doing it more for a legacy than anything now. So just trying to make the best possible music I can to be able to sit around for that long. And the only way I feel like you got to do that is you have to be saying something.
You want to make the music that some little kid is going to watch their cousin get back and open and put it on, just like you did.
Yeah, you know, so just something that's going to stand the test of time. So I feel like, you know, how rap music becomes so trendy. And so I just want to make something that's just going to be like, you listen to it 50 years later and you're like, oh, this is good, you know?
Last thing, what's the last track we should play? We can go out on anything you want. Give you some of yours, something someone else's, something we've name checked, something we haven't name checked. What's the final song to end the show?
My favorite song right now is about a Frost Children. It's called Marigold.
Why have you chosen that track?
It just makes me feel good. And that's where I'm at in my life. I want to listen to music that, like I said, makes me happy, man. You know? And it just gives me a bubbly feeling. It's making me smile.
Then that's the track. That's the track we'll finish on. It's been lovely to speak to you, man. Thank you so
much. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I watch you wake up.
Always something else. Ooh.
Marigold by Frost Children there, the final choice of my guest on the first time today, Danny Brown. And that is the end of this episode and the end of this season of The First Time. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. You can, of course, go back and listen back to previous episodes on BBC Sounds. So you can hear my chats with John Grant, Beth Ditto, Holly Johnson, Laurie Anderson, Kate Le Bon, David Holmes and Stormzy. And we'll be back with a new series of The First Time very soon indeed. I can promise you that. Until then, I've been Matt Everett. Thanks for listening.
Tell me lies if you need to. All I wanted from the start was to see you. Tell me lies, I believe you.
Download and subscribe to your favourite Six Music shows on the BBC Sounds app.
Right now, it's the New Music Fix playlist.